Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. The religious landscape in America is undergoing a transformation. Once the dominant religious group, white Christians, now account for fewer than half of the American public. That's a 38% drop in the last four decades. The trend has been obvious to those who study religion in the United States, including Robert P. Jones. He's the CEO of the Public Religion Research Institute. He's also author of the 2016 book, The End of White Christian America. A paperback version was released in July with a new afterword reflecting the political realities of the day. Robert Jones joins us by phone. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for having me back.
I guess we could start with a bit of a primer and what we mean by white Christian America. Maybe it's obvious, but just to be on the safe side. Tell us, what does it mean?
No. I think you're right. So, you know, one of the stats that we're looking at are white, non-Hispanic Americans who identify as Christian, and that is any kind of Christian, Catholic, Protestant, non-denominational, Orthodox, any kind of Christian group. And one of the remarkable things in the country is that just if we look in the last 10 years, we have gone from a country, if we go back to just 2008, even the kind of two presidential election cycles ago, 54% of the country at that time was white and identified as white and Christian. And today, that number is 43%. So we dropped just a little bit more than a percentage point a year in terms of the percentage of Americans who identify as white, non-Hispanic, and Christian.
Is there any way in your research to understand whether this is changing attitudes or deaths and births?
You know, it's a little of both. And the engines behind this, I often talk about as the three Ds. And so the first one is just demographics. And so we are seeing a decline in just the percentage of white Americans in the country. The latest numbers from the Census Bureau have us at 2042 will be the first year that the country is majority non-white. But that's only part of the story. That's still out on the horizon a bit. The other piece of this is also kind of demographic. It's declining birth rates among white, and particularly among white Christian groups in the country. And then the third one, though, is very internal to churches, and that is disaffiliation. So that there are, particularly since the 1990s, we are seeing a steady outflow of particularly younger people from churches, and almost all of them are really leaving white Christian churches, not Latino or African-American churches.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the demise of white Christian America as we know it. My guest is Robert Jones. He's been on the show before when he wrote in 2016 or had it published his book, The End of White Christian America. He's founding CEO of the nonprofit, non-affiliated public, not politically affiliated Public Religion Research Institute. And there's a new report out that confirms what you wrote about for the 2016 book, Robert Jones. So what's different?
Well, you know, what's remarkable is, you know, when you write books, there's a long lead time to a book being published.
Right.
So in the book, I was actually using 2014 data in the book. And so what I had documented in the book was the leading edge of this change. And I had noted that at 2014, we were showing that the country had slipped to being 47% white and Christian. So just to show you how quickly this is moving, we now have 2015 and 2016 data, and it went from 47 to 45 to 43% just in the last 2 years. So this is certainly not plateauing at this point, still continuing to slide. And the last, just so your listeners know, this last report where we're documenting the 43% number is based on a very, very large landscape survey. In fact, it's the largest survey that's ever been conducted on religious identity and denominational identity in the country, and included 40,000 interviews conducted across 2016. So we are very, very, you know, confident the margin of error is less than one percentage point on the data here.
In all 50 states, right?
And we covered all 50 states. It's one of the unique things as well is that we actually have state-level data. So we have all 50 states. So just for example, Ohio, you know, if we take the as goes Ohio, you know, so goes the nation mantra that we hear during the election
cycle. Yep.
every time, you know, we see these numbers in even in Ohio. We think of Ohio as kind of very heartland America. But, you know, a decade ago, 64% of Ohioans were identified as white and Christian. That number's still a majority territory, but it's dropped 8 percentage points down to 56% today. And that's also true for neighboring Michigan, was 62% white and Christian a decade ago. It's 50% today. So we're seeing these changes, not just on the coast, but really all throughout the country.
It's dropping more in some places than others. What does that tell us?
Well, I think some of it is about, this combination of demographic change and also younger people either moving out of certain places or certainly moving out of churches at different rates.
And then what about the millennials? Are they part of that? I mean, it's the largest group since the baby boomers.
Mm-hmm. That's right, and they're really driving a lot of this change. So, you know, just to give you a quick sense of this, today, you know, so we're looking at in the country today, the bookend of this is the rise of the religiously unaffiliated in the country. So today we have a quarter of the country, 24% of the country, claims no religious affiliation whatsoever. So when people are leaving these, you know, white Christian churches, they're not going to other religions. They're not really going to they're going to this kind of nothing category. And among young people, this is really accentuated. We're now looking at nearly 4 in 10 of the millennial generation, those Americans under 30. So nearly 38% of them now claim no religious affiliation at all.
And that's a large percentage compared to, say, the baby boomers at that age.
Yeah, so if you look at baby boomers now, they're only about 1 in 10. But what's interesting, religiously unaffiliated. But what's interesting, if you take the baby boomers back even to when they were in their 20s, right? Because of course, it's true that every generation in their 20s is less religiously affiliated. You know, typically the story is you get married, you have some kids, you're looking for kind of a religious education and community, and that's the stage at which kind of they're higher. Usually 30s, people in their late 20s and 30s are higher religiously affiliated. But if you take even the baby boomers back to their 20s, there's still only about 10 to 15% of them unaffiliated, even in their 20s. So this generation is, you know, more than twice as likely to be religiously unaffiliated in their 20s, even compared to the baby boomers at that same stage of life.
You know, when you look across the landscape of the nation, though, there's still a church on every street corner, it seems like.
Yeah, there are. There are lots of seminaries, lots of churches,
right.
But what we're seeing is a kind of graying of the membership, particularly among churches and denominations that have been predominantly white. And we're seeing that, interestingly enough, not just among we saw a kind of first wave of this decline among the mainline Protestant denominations, that is like Episcopalians and Presbyterians and Methodists. But we're now seeing even a second wave of this decline among white evangelical Protestants. So that's also a new piece that this report highlights, is that, you know, if you look back just a decade ago, 23% of the country identified as white evangelical Protestant. That number has slipped now to 17%. Of the country.
What does that bode? What does it mean long term? Is there any way to put that into any kind of prose? I mean, can you talk about that?
Sure. You know, I think one just big picture way of putting it is that the religious future of America is less white. It's less white. It's more brown. And it's also less religious. So we're going to have if we look at the sectors that are growing, it's Latino Christianity that is really growing quite quickly. African-American Christianity is staying, holding its own, not really losing or gaining members. Asian-Pacific Islander Christianity is growing, and it really is just this kind of white non-Hispanic group that is shrinking along and with growth of the unaffiliated. So I think we'll see religious America looking less white, more diverse, and a kind of bigger part of the country being more religiously unaffiliated in the country. So kind of more diversity all the way around. And yeah, as I said before, it's important to note this isn't just happening in big cities and the coast and among coastal elites. I mean, this is really happening across the country, all the way through the heartland, even in the South. We're seeing, you know, south of the Midwest, where you kind of think of the country being kind of more immune to maybe some of these forces, we're still seeing it all the way through.
Is this more like, is there a comparison country out there, another developed country that you can compare the United States and what it's going through to?
Well, what's interesting is that, you know, if I were in, you know, anywhere in Western Europe, mm-hmm. and I was sort of touting these exact same statistics, and I said, hey, you know, a quarter of the country is religiously unaffiliated, the response, if I were in London, would be, where did all those religious people come from? Right? Because right. That would actually
That's what
sound
I wondered.
Quite low
yeah.
To them. So I think that for a long time, it really has been, America has been the exception among Western developed countries in how high, you know, highly religious we are, and we remain that way. So I think all of these changes have to be kind of understood in an American context where, you know, still three quarters of the country claims some religious affiliation. That still looks quite different than Western Europe. That looks much, much more secular than we do even with these more recent changes.
Do we know anything about education levels?
Yeah, it's interesting. It's complex. You know, there. I think the assumption sometimes is that there's a negative correlation between, you know, education and religion. We see some of that, particularly among whites, but it's not really as straightforward as one might think. And so, one of the interesting things about education, probably the most interesting thing, is that we found that one of the things that is accelerating the decline of white evangelical Christianity is actually more evangelical women getting college degrees. And what we know about that is that family size typically goes down. So basically, evangelical women, more of them are getting college degrees. They're wanting to plan their children around careers. So they're typically having fewer children. That's actually contributed to the demographic decline of that branch of American Christianity.
And are there any outliers? I think, was it the Mormon religion that maybe isn't having the shrinkage of membership as much?
Yeah, that's right. You know, they're small in the country, so it's important to remember, you know, we're talking about 1% of the country that identifies as Mormon. There's certainly, you know, Utah, Nevada, other places kind of in the Mountain West where they're highly concentrated. But that's right. They're having, if you're looking for places that have higher retention rates, it's Hindus, Mormons, and non-Christian religions in the country.
And what about gender differences? I thought that was very interesting.
You know, so we're still seeing, I think, more. It's always been the case, I think, that women have led American denominational attendance and affiliation levels. But we are seeing some. You know, we have a big chart in the report where we kind of look at gender levels by religion. And what we see is at the top of the chart, religions that are more dominated by men are Hindus, Muslims, are both of those are in solid majority territory. The unaffiliated are more likely to be men as well. And then down at the other end of the spectrum, the places that are overwhelmingly more likely to be women are Unitarian Universalists, African American Protestants, Jehovah's Witnesses, and white evangelical Protestants are groups on the other side.
We're talking about the changing face of white Christian America. It's changing in that it's fewer and fewer identify as that. My guest is Robert P. Jones. He's the founding CEO of Public Religion Research Institute, which conducted the study that we're talking about right now. He's also the author of the 2016 The End of White Christian America. There's a new paperback edition with a new afterword that was released in July. We will continue our conversation. If you want to join the conversation, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. 40 years ago, white Christians represented about 8 in 10 Americans. Now that demographic makes up about 4 in 10 Americans. We're talking about the demise of white Christian America today and what that means in terms of leadership and politics. Still with us is the CEO of the Public Religion Research Institute and author of the 2016 book, The End of White Christian America, Robert Jones. There's a new paperback edition with a new afterword that was released in July. We'll have a link to more about that on our website at WOSU.org. /all sides. Once again, Robert Jones, thanks again for joining us today.
Happy to be here.
You've written that in order to understand the magnitude of the shift, it's important to assess white Christian America's waning cultural influence and the anxiety that that's causing them.
You know, that's right. I ended up having to do a lot of historical spade work for the book. And, one of the historians that I read had this great summary of kind of the power of the kind of white Christian and particularly the white Protestant world. You know, we even have this acronym, WASPY, White Anglo-Saxon Protestant, which is often a kind of shorthand for kind of elite, well-educated, well-off financially, America, kind of the part of America that kind of was in control of things. And the quip that he had, he said, look, you know, if you were in charge of something big and important in the middle of the 20th century, chances are you were white, you were male, and you were Protestant. When I talk about, white Christian America, I'm really thinking, and when I use that term, I'm really thinking of it as a metaphor for, this era that has really passed from the scene where it really was white Protestants that were really had their hands on the levers of government, on the levers of business, leaders in civic organizations, both local and national, and really had a lock on power in the country. And this has really changed quite dramatically over the last 40 or 50 years.
You talked about the splitting up of the mainline Protestant community. What brought that about, and what difference does that make?
Yeah, kind of begin the book with an obituary for white Christian America, just a way of kind of laying it out. And, at the end, I talk about the kind of survivors of this world. There's kind of two branches of the family tree, and there's this kind of mainline Protestant world that was really mostly dominant in the Northeast and upper Midwest. And then there was this other branch of the family tree, the white evangelical group, really anchored mostly in the South and the lower Midwest, and they've had kind of two different reactions to this. The mainline Protestant world, for whom the declines hit earlier, have had more time really to work through what that means, and I think have really moved toward kind of accepting their place as less, in charge of everything and a little more, on equal footing. But I think the evangelical community has had less time. The changes have hit them mostly in the last decade. And I think the sense that they have lost kind of cultural power, losing demographic power, I think this has been a lot of the anger and anxiety that we've seen animating our politics over the last few years.
Let's take a question from Sean in the Northland area. Hi, Sean. You're on the air.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good.
I was calling because I was listening in the car and – the author's use of language like death of and demise and end of, white Christians in the United States seems hyperbolic. I understand that the trend is strong, and those are big shifts in the
What word would you use, Sean?
Gosh, I don't even know. it just seems so the language he's using seems so apocalyptic, and I think that that's part of this trend about the difficulty we're having with race dialogue right now is because, we talk about, especially white people, talk about, and I'm white, talk about, a slightly browner profile in our demographics, and we're talking mm-hmm. about the world coming to an end for white people. And the Northland area has really been enriched by the immigrants that have come into this town. I mean, the white people abandoned this neighborhood in droves 20, 30, 40 years ago, and the immigrants have really brought it back.
Mm-hmm.
So when I look at my neighborhood, I don't look at, that slightly browner skin tone in the demographic as being the demise of white
culture. So you think then, I guess what you're saying is it's a pejorative. You're seeing it's casting a negative on the change. Robert Jones, what do you make of that?
Well, it's a really thoughtful set of comments, and I want to be careful here too. So when I named the book "The End of White Christian America," I certainly was a little worried that it might be misunderstood. I spent a lot of time in the book, which is harder to do here on the air, but of explaining that I really do mean this as a metaphor. And to just give you a couple of examples, if we just remember back in 1960 when John F. Kennedy was running for president, he spent a lot of time explaining himself as a Catholic, and there was a lot of anti-Catholic sentiment in the country. Catholics couldn't join country clubs. They were all Protestant affairs. I think from our standpoint today, it's a little hard, I think, to even remember how powerful this white Protestant lock on power was in the country. The early white supremacist movements in the country, for example, weren't just anti-black. I mean, they weren't just terrorizing African-American families. They had in the crosshairs Catholics and Jews as well, right? It was very much a white Protestant protecting a kind of white Protestant section of the country. And I think that one of the things that we're still struggling with when we see things from like Charlottesville and other things and the kind of spike in kind of white identity politics, I think it's important for us to remember that when we've seen that in the country, it has been when particularly a white Protestant majority and white Protestant power has been threatened is when we see these things tick up. And I think we're at another one of those moments today. But for the first time, we're at a place where white Protestants in particular, who are down now to only 30% of the country, if you only take white Protestants, are not in a place of even demographic majority, much less cultural majority. And I think that makes the anxiety for that group, for many people in that group, obviously not for this caller, but for many people in that group, that's a really different America to live in. And I think there's many people who are just beginning to realize just how dramatic the changes have been in the country.
Sean, thank you so much for your call. I appreciate it. 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can check out our Facebook page, whatever works for you. If you want to join the conversation, we're talking about the changing demographics of religion in the United States. My guest is Robert Jones. He's founding CEO of Public Religion Research Institute. It just completed a massive study of this issue of the United States in all 50 states. He's the author of the 2016 book, The End of White Christian America. 614-292-8513. And Jessica in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, Anne. Hi, Bobby. Good morning.
Hi.
I'm a rabbi, so I can't specifically speak to the change of white Christian America, but I also do a tremendous amount of interfaith work in Columbus. And just like your last caller, I guess I was wondering if Robert could speak to what he found in his research about what I would term more of a paradigm shift in religious affiliation and in the way religion is being used as a tool vis-a-vis American politics now. Because what I am finding is that perhaps there is a decline, there absolutely is a decline in what Robert wrote about first in 2014. And I was, I loved that book. I think that the more we talk about it as a decline in white Christian America, the more we provoke those who we want to join us to feel oppressed. And we want the oppressor to become part of this new America that we're building. And I think that churches are really, really valuable in that. So if you could speak to that, I'd really appreciate it.
Sure. Great. Well, no, thank you so much. And thank you for the kind words about the book. I really appreciate that. So what's interesting is, I mentioned that I began the book with an obituary, which is a pretty, not subtle place to start a book. But one of the reasons why I did that is I actually think that it's a real question of like whether describing something in this way is provoking a reaction or whether, the reaction is already there. And I think when I was writing the book, And again, I was writing the book using 2014 data, and you know, the book came out in the middle of 2016, so it was well before the 2016 election cycle. But one of the things I was seeing already, even before you know this tumultuous cycle that we've seen, is this real deep sense of anxiety, and that there was a kind of visceral sense of it, particularly among conservative white Christians, evangelical Christians in the country. They were feeling embattled. They were feeling, even discriminated against. We see this in survey questions, that they were now the victims of discrimination. There's a lot of that sentiment in the community. And what I wanted to do was to write in a way that really gave voice to that and really explain what was going on. It's sort of like, you know, if you're in a deep relationship and you're having an argument with your spouse and it's over something stupid like who put the dishes in the sink, and you argue about that for 45 minutes and you finally realize, oh, we're actually arguing about something much deeper in the relationship. Mm-hmm. I feel like our politics have been like that, that all of our political fights end up being fights to the death. And part of it is because there's this great anxiety about how the country is changing. Basically we have one just quick survey question that gives evidence of this. We asked right before the election, do you think American culture and way of life has changed for the better or changed for the worse since the 1950s? And it turns out that the country is evenly divided on that question, and the two political parties are mirror images of each other. Two-thirds of Democrats say that things have changed for the better since the 1950s. Two-thirds of Republicans say things have changed for the worse since the 1950s. And there's no group in the country more convinced that things have changed for the worse than white evangelical Protestant Christians. 75% of them say things have changed for the worse since the 1950s. So I think this anxiety is there. And I'm hoping that one of the things the book has done is sort of bring it out in the open so we can actually have a conversation about it.
All right. Well, Jessica, thank you so much. I appreciate your time. Time to take the time to call in today. Do they say why that is? I mean, in the interviews that you did, do we understand why they think it's worse than it was in the 1950s?
You know, we do. I mean, it really does have to do. We did a lot of analysis on this actually around the election cycle, and one of the questions was that I think everybody was asking is, was the election or are the anxieties that we saw particularly among white working class people and white evangelical Protestants, who were one of the most supportive groups of Trump, mm-hmm. by the way, 81% of white evangelicals voted for Trump in the election. And what was going on there? And what we found is that over and over when we would ask questions about, racial anxiety, the way the country's changing, rising numbers of immigrants, perceptions of immigrants, all of those things pretty much registered kind of negative reactions from white working class Americans and white evangelicals. And those were actually more predictive of support for Trump than were economic anxieties, by the way. So it really is being driven that this kind of reactionary politics is being much more driven by anxieties over racial change in the country and immigration and those kinds of issues more than it is economics.
Did you identify any kind of converse reaction among non-whites in feeling more empowered as they gain numbers?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. We don't really see that on the other side. I mean, so I think this is one of the reasons why things are quite fraught. And we're entering, it's just worth saying, I think we're at a new place in the country. I think the model for us has been for so long, we had such a supermajority of white Protestants in the country that even though we had religious freedom, the model had always been a kind of melting pot model, or if you think about a chair, like a dining room table or something, that it was a table that white Protestants owned, and white Protestants sat at the head of the table, and they would invite different groups to take up a chair and different ways of immigrants in the country. But it was always a table that white Protestants owned, and there was always an expectation that if you pulled up to that table, there was some degree of assimilation toward a white Protestant ideal that was expected from you. And I think what's challenging today is that we are just not in a position where no one owns the, or we're in a position where no one owns the table, and white Protestants in particular are having to adjust to this new situation where they don't own the table, they're not sitting at the head, but they're having to pull up a chair alongside everyone else and kind of negotiate a new future for the country. And I think that's really different, and we're on a pretty steep learning curve here.
Doug in Columbus, you're on the air with Robert Jones. Hi, Doug.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Hey, I wanted to bring up the subject of atheism and how it relates to Mr. Jones's book. I think there's much less stigma now for people to declare being atheist or even agnostic than there used to be even 6, 7, 8 years ago. And that might have a big effect on some of his research.
How does this all... good question. Robert Jones?
There's no doubt about it that... That the stigma against like not going to church or synagogue or mosque or not being religiously affiliated has gone down over time. But what's notable and actually quite interesting about this big group of religiously unaffiliated Americans now that make up again about a quarter of the country is that if we look underneath them, the folks who identify as atheists or agnostic are actually only a majority of that bigger group. So. Among this group of religiously unaffiliated Americans, only about 3 in 10 identify as atheist or agnostic. About 6 in 10 identify as just kind of a generically secular. And interestingly enough, in the American context, 16% of this group that's unaffiliated nonetheless identifies themselves sees themselves as a religious or spiritual person. So that's a pretty interesting kind of outcome. But so I think it may have affected it some. But I think the bigger thing is that the expectation of.
Looks like we're losing Robert Jones. We'll have to check on that. In the meantime, if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We have an email from Cynthia. Where I live, township trustees control the area by courting church members. All it takes to be elected in a local contest is to have the support of members of any big church. Then the interests of the church cancel out secular ideas in the township. Thanks a lot, Cynthia. Do we have Robert Jones back? Okay, Robert, you're there. Nope. Okay. And we also have an email from Debbie. She writes, could it be that the decline in Christian affiliation have anything to do with the identifying with the Republican Party? I'm a white Christian Democrat, and it took me forever to find a church that wasn't like a political rally instead of teaching Christ's message. Thanks a lot for those emails. If you have an email to send, the address is allsides@wosu.org. And Robert Jones, do we have him back on the air? Robert Jones, let's put him on the air. He is not on the air. Robert, are you there?
I'm here.
Sorry about that. Don't know what happened.
Sorry about that. I'm back.
We have one before I let you know, I've got an email I want to read to you, and I've got a call I want to take. So from Debbie, she says, I'm a white Christian Democrat, and it took me forever to find a church that wasn't like a political rally instead of teaching Christ's message. What is the intersection of politics and religion these days?
That's a great question, and it's changing. One of the more interesting things that we found in terms of politics in the report is the changing composition, a religious composition of the Republican and Democratic parties. So the most dramatic changes have actually happened among self-identified Democrats. So 10 years ago, about half of Democrats identified as white and Christian. Today, that number has dropped down to 3 in 10, white and Christian. Among Republicans, interestingly enough, there's been less change. 10 years ago, 81% of Republicans identified as white and Christian. That number's dropped a bit, but it's still 73%. So what we're seeing is the Republican Party remaining fairly homogeneous and remaining, nearly three-quarters white and Christian, while the Democratic Party is becoming increasingly diverse. In fact, today there are as many religiously unaffiliated people as there are white Christians in the party. So that's something quite different, whereas the ratio of white Christians to unaffiliated people in the Republican Party is 7 to 1.
So is it fair to say that the Democratic Party is more reflective of the nation overall?
Oh, absolutely. It has continued to follow the shift over the last 10 years, whereas the Republican Party essentially still looks not that much different than it did a decade ago. And if we were kind of to map the current, they look about like seniors, or if you take it back in time, they look about like the country did 30 years ago, rather than the way the country does today.
And then real quick from Tom in Columbus. Hi, Tom, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call right quick.
Sure.
I'm listening. I'm trying to figure out, is your position the author? Do you see this as a problem that there's a decrease in this population? Because Christianity is organized around virtues and principles and beatitudes. It's not organized around race.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not understanding the so what there's a decrease. It could be a decrease in black Protestants. I mean, the issue is around Christianity. So is this a politicization of religion?
You don't think politics? You don't think religion plays a role in politics?
No, I'm asking a question. My question was, do you think that it's a problem that there's a decrease in this specific population?
Yeah.
And because Christianity is not organized around, you know, race, is organized around principles and virtues and certain values, not around race.
Well, so. Okay. I think you made an interesting point. I don't know if it was in your book or where it was, Robert Jones, that actually on Sundays, that's the most segregated day of the week in the United States.
Yeah, I'm quoting Martin Luther King Jr.
On that piece,
you know, that he was famous. He mentioned in three or four, you know, very prominent speeches and you know, when King said this, it was an indictment of American Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said, look, it's still true that the most segregated hour in American life is 11 a.m. on Sunday morning. Interestingly enough, it's still largely true. We've made some progress in terms of more diverse churches, but today, the latest congregational data we have shows that about 86% of churches today are essentially monoracial churches, and that goes straight back to a history of segregation and slavery in the country. Religious organizations were organized around a kind of segregated America when most of them were born, and continue to have that trajectory today. I think that is a challenge. So I'm a demographer and a sociologist. I don't really have a stake in whether the decline is good or bad. I do think it presents some real challenges for democracy, even beyond the challenges that it obviously presents for white Christian churches. But I think this shifting landscape that is, I think, created a lot of anxiety among kind of the people on the losing side of these demographics. I think that is presenting us with some real challenges for a democratic society that is a healthy exchange of ideas and not just a set of reactionary tribal politics.
Robert Jones, thank you so much for your time today. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Coming up, we're going to continue the conversation along these lines with a local point of view. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. 40 years ago, America was white and Christian, mostly. Today, the percentage of white Christian Americans is shrinking quickly. Now, almost every Christian denomination in the U.S. is showing signs of growing diversity. We're talking about the religious profile of America and how it's changed. Joining me is Chicago-based justice advocate and worship leader, Darren Calhoun. Welcome to the show, Darren.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for the welcome.
And also senior pastor of the King Avenue United Methodist Church in Columbus, John Keeney. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
King Avenue is hosting a free speaker series featuring Christian leaders striving for inclusion of traditionally marginalized people and communities. And if listeners want to know more about that, check out the link on our website at WOSU.org. Darren will be giving the talk this weekend on the intersection of racial and LGBTQ identity. Why is King Avenue doing this speaker series? What does it have to do with anything?
Well, we see the divide in our in our society, black and white, gay and straight, race and orientation are two of the flashpoints in our society. So we started this Changing the Conversation series to bring in speakers around the country who would address issues where we might be able to have conversation on these very divisive issues.
Darren Calhoun, I wasn't able to find in the research that we were talking about earlier reference to LGBTQ. So what? Tell us what you have to say about that role in the church.
Yeah, we are seeing overall, especially in evangelical churches, a kind of resurgence of people who have been traditionally marginalized by the church, showing up, reclaiming space, and making sure that their voices are heard, making sure the stories are known, and making sure that Christianity doesn't get consumed by something that's about power and about politics, but instead is really about inclusion for everyone.
You know, we had this email from Debbie, the white Christian Democrat. She said it took her forever to find a church that wasn't like a political rally instead of teaching Christ's message. Is that a challenge, John Keeney? I mean, is that something that some people are looking for that when they come to church on Sunday?
A political rally?
Yeah.
Oh, I think some are. I find many people come to our church because they've been rejected by their families or their home churches because of their orientation in particular. We will, almost every service, say gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual, just so people know that they are accepted.
Instead of that all are welcome kind of message.
Yeah, I mean, it's not uncommon for somebody to send us an email saying, will I be safe at King Avenue?
Tell us about, Darren Calhoun, your journey. It's very wrapped up in the church that you grew up in. You're a black, gay, Christian man. What happened?
Yeah, I grew up as a part of church, as many as most Americans still do to this day. I was part of a church, and around my college years, I came out as gay and Christian. But that was still something, at least in the years that I came out.
What year was that? I'm sorry to interrupt.
No problem. That was around 1999.
Okay,
98, 99. Mm-hmm. And so I remember it specifically being around the time that Ellen came out. And so for me, Ellen DeGeneres.
Yeah.
And for me, there still weren't a lot of role models. There still wasn't a lot of public visibility about LGBTQ people, much less about LGBTQ people with religious identity.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the first things that I remember was, even as a college student, the first time I started really digging into the Bible was to figure out if the Bible was sending me to hell or not. And I remember some of the first conversations people had with me were, well, you know, the Bible tells you this and the Bible tells you that. They were messages to tell me that I was condemned or that I somehow needed to change my orientation to be acceptable to God. And so that really pushed me to try everything within my power to change my orientation. Eventually, I became a part of a church that was very toxic. This church was someplace that promised to help me become heterosexual so that I could go to heaven. I spent about 8 years giving up everything, giving up school, giving up my home life, giving up friends, family, relationship, the business that I was running, doing all that in the name of how can I become straight and acceptable to God. Now, the church was telling me this, but I realized God was telling me something a little bit different about what acceptance was and about what love was.
Why did you go that route? Some people do, most don't.
In some ways, I didn't know that there was another route. Everyone around me was kind of indifferent on the matter. Not many people seemed to be talking about it. No one knew what was and what wasn't right, other than, well, we always just heard that the Bible said X, Y, Z. But even for those who maybe do hold a conservative view or a traditional view of marriage being between one man and one woman,
mm-hmm.
there still wasn't information about what do you do with that if you're not attracted, if you're a man who's not attracted to a woman. The default will be, oh, we'll just be celibate. But even churches that believe in that as an ideal don't really have structures set up to support people through lifelong celibacy. And so for me to respond to that, it was just, I wanted to be okay. I wanted to be all right. I wanted to be acceptable and lovable. And I thought I had to do those things to be accepted.
So you're celibate now?
No, I did explore celibacy for a number of years. Mm-hmm. And I would say I gave my best effort to figure out what that would look like. I'm still not in a relationship, but I'm more open to, really, there's a spectrum of religious thoughts and ideas, everything from people who are committed to celibacy to people who are in spiritual friendships or celibate partnerships, to people who live in intentional communities, to people who are married, to people who are in non-monogamous relationships. I think there's a wide spectrum of Christianity and faithful believers who are figuring out how to live that out. And so I'm trying to figure out what's my next step as well.
There is a growing diversity in the religious community, no question about that. But the Black Christian church still is a touch point for people who are anti-LGBTQ.
Yeah, there's a tension there that we have to challenge on both sides, if you don't mind the borrowing the phrase. On one side of it, we do see that religious communities of color, whether that be Black, Latinx, Asian American communities, that there tends to be a sense of heightened homophobia, trans antagonism, and so forth. On the other side, I think that what's happening in religious communities of color isn't unique to what's happening in the larger religious landscape, but for religious communities of color, we're experiencing double minority status. And so if you are a gay person, if you are a trans person, then you're already a minority in society. You're already an outcast in some ways. You're not fitting in. But then to also be a person of color in a society that is white dominant or white censored means that you have to you lose potentially another segment of the small community that you already have where you feel like you could belong. Hmm. And so when it comes to people of color spaces, to be a person of color and to be LGBTQ often means you have to choose between which one and which space you're going to be accepted in. Because if you're accepted in the majority LGBTQ space, it's often white space. If you're accepted in people of color space, mm-hmm. which is more cultural, music and traditions and family and so forth, then it's often a space that, because less people are willing to risk the rejection, less people have come out and less progress has been made.
Do you see that changing, though?
I do. Deborah Jan Lee writes a book called Rescuing Jesus, and it's about how people of color, queer folks, and how women are reclaiming evangelicalism. And what I'm seeing and what I'm a part of is several movements that are working to do this. People have been rejected. People have gone through the horror stories like mine and come out saying, you know, I still believe Jesus. I still believe that the church is a valuable tool, that the local church has impact that many other organizations can't have. And so we're showing back up. We're reclaiming churches. We're creating new spaces of worship. We're building new communities that sometimes don't exist in church. Maybe it's a conference. Maybe it's a Facebook group online. But people are definitely holding on to the faith without holding on to the institutions that have traditionally marginalized us.
We only have a few seconds left, really, John Keeney. But besides people like Darren Calhoun, who will be here this weekend, what other sorts of points of view are you bringing to the table in the in changing the conversation?
2 years ago, Rachel Held Evans spoke about millennials, how millennials see Christianity differently, how they approach Christianity differently. Last year, we had John Shore, who's a blogger. He was brought up in a conservative church, and at his church, he had to sign a document that he would not accept LGBT persons in his church, and that opened his eyes, and he flipped 180 degrees on his Christianity. So we've had those. Darren's the third in our series.
Darren Calhoun, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's awesome to be here. Thank you for having me.
Deron Calhoun is a Chicago-based justice advocate and worship leader. He will be presenting in a free speaker series at the King Avenue Church. So check out the link on our website at WOSU.org. Also, John Keeney, senior pastor at King Avenue United Methodist Church. Thanks to you as well.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.